Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome, everybody, to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson, and it is Monday, July 2nd, 2018. Wow, I can't believe how much time has passed. Now, in 2017, Adam and I were invited to be faculty at an event called the Summit at Sea, put on by Robert Helms and Russell Gray, the hosts of the Real Estate Radio Guys, a real estate investing talk program for investors. It's been running since 1997. Now look, neither Adam or I knew what to expect, but we were intrigued by the other faculty, many of whom we either already knew personally or knew of and really wanted to meet and get to know. Further, people who had attended prior year summits raved about the experience. Well, we were both blown away, the quality of the staff, the commitment to teaching and learning, and the amazing tribe of people that were drawn to this, all combined to create a truly remarkable experience. And one of my key takeaways, I have many, but one of my biggest ones that I wanted to share with you listeners today is the importance of real estate in one's portfolio, both as a means of building and maintaining wealth. And I can't think of anybody better to take us through the basics, the ABCs of real estate investing than Robert Helms and Russell Gray, the Real Estate Radio Guys. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, Chris. Always great to talk to you, my friend.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. Listen, I definitely wanted to get some of the amazing events that happened at this year's Summit at Sea on tape here with our listeners. And we will towards the back of the podcast, along with a special offer for our listeners. But first, let's talk about real estate. Are you guys up for that?
I think we're usually ready to talk about real estate with very little notice. Sure.
Great. All right. Hey, many of my listeners are struggling, really, with where to invest these days. And truthfully, real estate may be expensive in certain or maybe even many locales right now. But it's also true that the more experience one has with real estate, the better. Robert, let's start at the beginning with Real Estate 101. You've been at it for a long time. For somebody just starting out, what are some of the basic reasons that you got into real estate investing and stayed with it?
Yeah, great question. You know, real estate is arguably different than any other type of investment. And here's what I mean by that. You never have to invest in a share of stock or a barrel of oil or an ounce of gold. Those are 100% discretionary investments. But real estate's not like that. We cannot sit out the real estate market. We must interact in a financial way with real estate. Doesn't mean we have to buy any of it, but we're going to rent a house. We're going to lease an office space. We're going to go on vacation. And because of that, it doesn't operate like other asset classes. We think it's the best investment in earth because it is the earth, and there aren't making any more of it, as we like to say. But not all real estate is the same. And it's not just about the real estate. It's about the person that invests in it. Lots of different ways to invest in real estate, lots of types of property. But rather than make it overwhelming, we have kind of a framework we use that's pretty simple. And it works like this. At the top, we picture what we call our personal investment philosophy. That's different for every person. And it's the thing that has them gravitating towards wanting to invest or own or hold property of some kind. And more probably time than we have today, but we have a pretty cool resource. We're happy to share with your listeners about that before we're done. A kind of an exercise to go through and figure out your personal investment philosophy. But once you figure out who you are as an investor, the next thing is to find a real estate market or markets, property types, demographics that you want to serve that will fulfill that personal investment philosophy of yours. For example, if you're a hands-on real estate investor, then you're looking for opportunities to buy stuff and add value and sell it at a profit. If you're a hands-off real estate investor, then you're looking to come alongside a professional investor who can help you, whether that's a syndication or a real estate investment trust or just a private placement or just a partnership. And so once you figure out a market or markets, the next thing is to find a team that can help. Real estate investing is a team sport, and there's lots of folks on your team, your broker, your loan professional, your tax person, your attorney, your rehab guy, a lot of people you'll need on your team, some of which maybe you're versed at that, but if you're not, those folks are going to be important. And once you've identified your team, now the final piece is the property. And I would argue that the property is actually the least important and most interchangeable part of the whole thing. And yet what most people do is they start with a property. They find a quote unquote good deal and they buy a property. And then if it's not in alignment with who they are and the kind of investor they are, then there's a recipe for disaster. And you hear people say, well, I tried real estate, but it didn't work. Real estate works if you do.
Hey, Chris, can I jump in on that? I have a
absolutely.
Bit to say. So I think one of the things that people sometimes don't understand is that real estate doesn't have a specific financial performance. It really is versatile. You can do a lot of different things with a real estate portfolio. And so I came out of the mortgage business. I have a background in insurance and financial services. And so I spent some time studying informally financial planning. And there's some really good things that come out of the paper asset world in terms of the way you structure a portfolio to handle good times and bad times. And what a lot of people don't understand is that pretty much everything you can do with a paper asset portfolio in terms of asset allocation and equity growth and cash flow generation and tax strategies and asset protection and estate planning, you can do with real estate. And it takes a little bit of learning to do it because it's not as commonplace out there to be able to find people that know how to do it. But it's worth the effort because you're building a portfolio that is really time tested. Real estate is time proven. You know, you go back 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, the wealthiest people own and control real estate. They might make their wealth someplace else, but lots of wealth gets stored for protective purposes in real estate. And so and the thing is, the units are so small that literally anybody can do it. You know, whether you just start with a little house somewhere or a piece of land, or if you build, you know, a big portfolio with, you know, tens of thousands of apartment buildings or hotels or whatever it is you want to put in it, everything you want to do or everything that you could do in terms of your financial planning, you can do with real estate.
Well, that's interesting. And I certainly had to get up the curve after my first summit at sea and starting to learn some terms. And Robert, you threw one out in there. I just want to make sure everybody's following along. You used a term, syndication. What does that mean?
Yeah, great question. So syndication is the ability to put people together to do a bigger deal. I might not have enough money to personally invest in a piece of property that I like, but maybe if I got three or four of my buddies together and we each put in $50,000 or $100,000, now we could do it. That's a simple syndication. But many of the bigger real estate transactions today, things like Russ mentioned, hotels, big commercial and office buildings, are almost always done as a syndication, a group of investors that come together. Now, there's some legal things you need to worry about there, but again, it's all learnable. For many of us, we are busy doing whatever we do in life to live, thrive, and survive. And the idea of putting real estate in our portfolio is interesting, but we don't have the time to go to the seminars, to read the books, to go out and, you know, roll up our sleeves and get out the paintbrushes and do it ourselves. And the great part is in real estate, you don't have to do that. A syndication is a vehicle where you can passively invest with a proven promoter, a proven operator of real estate that will let you come alongside and benefit from the financial performance and sometimes even the tax benefits that real estate offers. So one of the fundamental questions for people to ask themselves if they're interested in real estate is, do I want to do it myself? Do I want to go out and find a property and qualify for the loan and get the tenants and all that, which is great. We do a ton of that. Or am I really more of a passive investor that would like to, you know, hand the football to someone who can make the play?
You know, Chris, if you really think of it, it's really just like a mutual fund, except it's not publicly traded. So a mutual fund is just a bunch of people pooling their money together, giving it to a fund manager who makes investment decisions towards a financial result. Could be income, could be equity growth, could be protection of principal, tax advantages, whatever it is. So again, going back to this notion that anything you can do within the paper asset world, you can do with real estate. That's really all a syndication is. And so it's very convenient for the passive investors, the people who are just putting the money in, and the fund manager, if you will, the sponsor, the syndicator, is the person responsible for finding the deal, vetting the deal, running the deal, just like when you turn your money over to a fund manager.
Great. Thank you so much for those explanations, because I have to admit, I was, you know, very unsophisticated about real estate investing. I knew the houses that I had personally owned, and I just extrapolated like, well, I guess then I would own two, but rent one out, you know, and maybe that's a logical first step that somebody could conceive of given their own personal experience. But what I saw at the summit at sea was this whole universe of niches of real estate, you know, commercial versus residential as two big buckets. And then within residential, there might be something even more niche, like residential assisted living. And we had Gene Guarino on in a prior podcast for people who remember that, which talked about how a house can be converted to create a place for people who are coming in for a little bit extra assistance in living towards end of life, but not full assisted living. Can have a place for that. There are commercial syndicated deals. There are multifamily, single family. There's a whole universe of things that people can invest in. And of course, I think my listeners are intrigued by this because, you know, we talk about primary wealth, secondary wealth, tertiary wealth. Real estate, depending on the flavor of it you get, is either primary or secondary. Primary might be farmland itself. Secondary would be the means of production, or, you know, the commercial real estate or the rentable properties, things like that. So I really like this as a model. And the more I've looked at it, the more I've just been slapping my forehead and saying, duh, I should have looked at this earlier. Where were my parents, right? Because it really has some extraordinary ways that real estate, as I mentioned in the intro, to both build and maintain wealth. And one of the areas that I really was very unsophisticated and unknowledgeable about was the tax advantages of that. Robert, can you speak to that, what the tax advantages are of being a real estate investor?
Yeah, obviously we're not tax professionals, but one of the things that we've learned over the years is that if you study a nation's tax code, you can tell where they would like to see you put your investment dollars. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty easy if you look at the U.S. tax code and a lot of places around the world, that there are tax benefits given to folks who will provide clean, safe, affordable housing and office space and farmland to other folks. And the idea is that we have a multitude of benefits that we can derive from real estate. There's the income, there's the long-term growth over time, there's amortization of the loan, which puts more of the real estate on your side of the balance sheet. But the tax benefits can be immense. Sometimes people actually choose a specific vehicle in real estate based on the tax result they're trying to figure out in their life. If they have a lot of high earned income and they want to offset that, there's ways to do that with real estate. There's credits. There's ways to take a property that you own and then push all of the gain and equity forward and not pay tax today. That's a called a tax deferred exchange, where you're exchanging for another property. So there's a lot of great tools. And you really start, you know, the whole idea of starting with personal investment philosophy is, why am I interested in real estate investing? Is it just for the cash flow? Is it because I want to acquire a bigger balance sheet over time? Or do I need some tax breaks? And so based on what your answers are to those questions, you're going to select real estate and, in fact, types and markets that are going to give you the best advantage you can.
So, Chris, one of the greatest tax breaks in real estate is depreciation. And the way depreciation works is you take the value of the structure, not the dirt, because the dirt's already dirt, but the building is deemed by the IRS to be deteriorating over time. So even though in the real world it's going up in value typically, for tax purposes it's going down in value and you're suffering a quote-unquote loss. But it's a phantom loss because you're not really putting any money out and you're able to take that write-off against money that you have coming in. And so that creates a huge tax benefit for you. And then inside of depreciation, which is typically on the building, you know, you're going to do it over maybe 27 and a half or up to almost 40 years, depending on the type of property it is, you have accelerated depreciation for certain components like the personal property or the fixtures. And so there's schedules that you can work with on your CPA to do that. But it's a way to get back a lot of capital by pulling tax breaks into the current and not having to pay current income tax against the money that you're bringing in today. So it's kind of complicated, but it's not super complicated. Any qualified CPA can help you understand how depreciation is one of the major tax breaks in real estate.
And I loved, thank you for that. And you know, to illustrate it, so let's say the building value was $275,000. 27 and a half years of depreciation schedule, $10,000 of write-off would come across that. So if I had $10,000 in income on this building, it would basically zero out. With the depreciation, we would say, oh, nothing happened here. My K-1 or whatever reporting form, I'd say, oh, it looks like nothing happened here. Even though what I might have experienced was $10,000 of cash flow. And it was interesting in the last presidential debate cycle between Hillary and Trump, not a political statement here, anybody, but Hillary was talking about how much she paid in taxes and was a little offended that Trump paid zero. But in fact, Trump's a real estate investor, and whether we think it's a good thing or a bad thing is a different discussion. But what's true is, what Robert, what you said is, the nation has written its tax code to get certain behaviors out of people. And we want houses, we want housing, we want real estate, we want productive farmland. And so the tax code benefits that. It also benefits oil wells and you name it, all sorts of things. Whether that's right or wrong is a different discussion, but there's the tax code. And that's what I came away, getting a slightly better appreciation for, is that, hey, this is how the system is run, and it wants me to do certain things. Maybe it'd just be easier if I did those things. Is that a fair way to look at it?
I think that's exactly how you look at it. Now, again, we like to say we don't want to let the tax tail wag the investment dog. Mm-hmm. We don't invest in real estate just for tax benefits, but based on what the rest of our economic life looks like, we can certainly structure our real estate investments so that they have the most advantage for us.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's a great way of putting it. And Russell, you and Robert, you co-wrote a book titled Equity Happens, which you were gracious enough to gift me a copy that has now been read by my son, my eldest daughter. We're in conversation. So thank you for that. It's a fantastic book covering the basics. And when more copies become available, I encourage people listening, if you're interested, to get one. Russ, first, when would more copies be available? Second, provocative title. What do you mean by equity happens?
It's really interesting. So I'm going to defer the first question
because
we don't know. It's in the process of being re-edited. The book is 14 years old,
right,
but they're timeless truths and timeless financial principles. But the concept of equity happens was really written on the basis that we have a failing currency. The U.S. dollar has a 115-year trend line that's down, which means that anything that's denominated in that currency over time is going to go up in dollar value. Now, that doesn't mean that it goes up in real world value, but it does mean that it holds its value. And so when you can use real estate to fix the debt, and then you gain the benefit of the appreciation of the price because of the failing dollar, even though you still only own a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house that you bought for $50,000 with a $40,000 loan, when that property is worth $400,000 or $500,000 because of inflation, you still only have a $30,000 or $40,000 loan, depending on how far you've paid it down. And so that spread is equity. And if you do nothing typically but just own real estate and take care of it and make your payments, you're going to experience equity. We call that passive equity. If you want to be a little bit more aggressive, you can find a dilapidated house, fix it up, and force the equity. And then that way you have some degree of control over it. It isn't necessarily just speculating on the direction of the market. And then there's other forms, amortized equity. Robert alluded to earlier, we don't think of the profit we get from paying down a loan or as profit to us, because typically we're making our home payments with our own income. So we're just putting money from our cash flow from our paycheck into paying down our loan. But when that money is coming in from the tenant, and you're paying down the loan with the tenant's money, that is profit to you. And that's usually worth anywhere from 2 to 3 or 4% a year. When you add up all of the different things going on inside a piece of real estate, it's very easy to get a 20% gain on your money invested in a very, very conservative structure. Most of the time, people who do investing think, I've got to have very risky investments, or if I want to be safe, I'm going to be down in the 5 or 6% range. But that's not true with real estate. And so the equity component of real estate, whether it's from the pay down of the loan or whether it's from the long-term appreciation of inflation, is a great way to build wealth when you combine it with fixing debt. So real estate investors get rich with debt, and the spread between the debt and the value is equity. And that's really where the big money gets made in real estate.
Get rich with debt. Now this is a strange idea. And I think a lot of people may, from the consumer side would understand that debt's a bad thing, right? If I have student debt, credit card debt, auto debt, these things weigh me down. So let's talk about how debt works for the real estate investor, because I think it's a super important concept. And it's one that took me a little while to begin to get my head around. Robert, let's start with you. How does debt work for you in this example?
Yeah, well, the first thing is you have to break the paradigm of debt being either good or bad, right? Mm-hmm. There's good debt and there's bad debt. Bad debt would be high interest credit card debt where you buy things that you're consuming and then you don't really need and then you pay for them for years. That's bad debt. Good debt is when you can control an asset like a piece of real estate and create long-term either cash flow or equity growth or tax benefit or all of the above. And so the concept is pretty simple. Because the banks and private lenders and all kinds of folks that have money to lend want security, they recognize real estate and property as some of the best security there is. And so they're happy to make a loan against the property. So if I bought a $100,000 property and I had $100,000, I could buy it for cash. And there might be some reasons to do that. But if I use leverage, if I use debt, imagine I could put $20,000 down and get an $80,000 loan. Now here's the cool part. The loan might be at 5%, but if the real estate value and the increase Russ talked about could approach 15, 18, 20%, then I get to make the difference. I get to arbitrage the spread, if you will. And here's why. The bank wants a predictable stream of income for their $80,000. They don't get any of the upside. Now, in fair disclosure, they also don't take any of the downside risk unless something catastrophic happens. But what we want as real estate investors is we want to control the asset, the appreciation, the increased rent over time, any improvements we make on the property to increase the value and or the cash flow. And all of that goes to the benefit of the $20,000, if you will, the money that we put down the property. So debt lets us control more. If I had that $100,000 to invest, I could buy $100,000 property, or I could buy five $100,000 properties by putting 20% down and getting a loan for the rest. So I'm able to control five times as much real estate, and I control all the upside of that real estate by bringing in a partner, which is the financial institution. I know Russ will have more to say about it because he was in the lending business for a long time.
It's the reason I got into the lending business, because I wanted to really understand it. And that arbitrage concept that Robert mentioned is probably the key. If you have a property that's going to generate cash flow at 10%, and you can borrow money at 5% to purchase it, how much 5% money do you want to borrow? You want to borrow all you can and own as many of those properties as you possibly can, because you're making a profit on the debt. And that's just on the cash flow. Then you add the tax breaks and the amortization and the long-term appreciation. So coming back to Robert's example, if you have a property in a marketplace that where it's appreciating 5%, so a $100,000 property is growing equity at the rate of $5,000 a year. If you own one property, your equity growth each year is $5,000 or 5%. But if you take that same $100,000 and you buy five properties, and now you have a top line portfolio of $500,000 in the very same market delivering the very same 5%, you have a $25,000 gain on your $100,000 investment. And that's a 25% equity growth rate. And then you add to that the cash flow and the amortization. And now you're talking about having a portfolio that might be growing at 30 plus 40% a year. And this is what people don't understand about real estate. When people make the comparison of the stock market over long periods of time versus real estate over a long period of time, they're just saying, if you had a house that was 100% paid for and a stock portfolio that was 100% paid for, over time, the stock market is maybe 1 point or 1.5 points better, 2 points or whatever the number is. But when you add leverage, debt into that real estate portfolio and tax and amortization, stocks can't touch real estate. I've debated this twice with a whole panel of people. I did it once at Freedom Fest in 2013, and we did it on our Investor Summit at Sea 6 months prior to that. And both times I won the debate. And I didn't win the debate because I'm smart. I won the debate because I was representing the winning investment. And it was just math. And it was so easy once someone understood the concept, how easy it was to do. But the problem is there's no financial education out there. We get our financial education from the paper asset investing world, who basically are salespeople who are there to sell us stocks, bonds, real estate, teach us to put our money in the banks, and put us in high tax. So our financial education system, which really doesn't exist, is a marketing system that feeds the government, feeds Wall Street, and feeds the banks. If you want to get out of that system and stop feeding those three institutions and keep more of your own money, real estate is the ideal investment vehicle to do it with. And it's easy to understand. You don't have to be a rocket scientist or a PhD to do real estate.
Well, very well said. And this gets back to something that I believe Robert said. So I want to just make sure we tease this concept out, because that holy trio of marketing arms of keeping us invested in Wall Street and all of that and the banking system, they went out of their way to tell us during the last housing, you know, boom and bust in 2006 through 2008 to talk to us about the people who got burned flipping, or the hairdresser who bought 19 homes in Las Vegas and got burned, because these people were all hoping to make money because housing was going to go up in price. They got badly burned by that. What you're talking about is something completely different, which is around controlling the variables as best you can, which includes the amount of leverage you've got, the cash flows that these properties have, the other non-cash benefits, that this takes some context. And that's why it begins with education, right? So that was really the subject I wanted to bring home, is not to just alert people that there's this wonderful thing called real estate out there, but that what I've learned is that there are ways to go about beginning to get involved in the complexity of it, such as it is, and to begin to get grounded in what's available out there, because there are ways to be exceedingly prudent and careful, and people have been doing this for a long time, and there is a way to do it, and there's a method. But to your point, Russ, nobody goes out of their way in the banking Wall Street government system to educate us about that. So that's what we're trying to do here today, is open people's eyes to that. And so, Robert, if somebody wanted to begin, just start really peeling this back, what's the best way for them to get started, do you think?
Yeah, so I think obviously the first thing to do is to understand. So you want to get educated about real estate investing. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of great ways to do that. It doesn't mean you have to go to a real estate broker or salesperson that wants to sell you a house or a property. There's great books and audio courses and podcasts. We've been doing our podcast for 20 years now. Well, if it was a radio show originally, and then the podcast now is heard in 190 countries. We're still on the radio. And there's lots of great resources to be able to start to get your mind around it. I would say this, though, real estate is not a perfect market, and that's actually a good thing. If I wanted to go today and buy a share of publicly traded stock, there's nothing I can do that's going to influence the price. The price is the price because we have a very efficient stock market. Real estate's not like that. Real estate, we can actually benefit from things like insider trading. We don't call it that, but when we learn something about a market or a particular property or a developer or a street corner where something's happening, we can decide to exploit that in a positive way and use that inside information. Can't do that in the stock market. When I find a seller that really wants out, I can negotiate a great deal for them and for me that I couldn't do in other types of markets. So the big thing about real estate is that you don't want to be overwhelmed by it. It can be as simple as buying the house next door. My mentor Jim Rohn said the kids should have a bike to ride and a bike to rent. And it's the same thing with real estate. If all you did was buy one more home and rent it out, that's a great start. But there's so many other ways that what we would encourage people to do is to, we say, get in touch with your inner investor. Figure out what it is that really pulls at you. What's interesting to you? If it's just a financial performance, okay, real estate can do that for you. If it's just a tax benefit, okay. But if there's a way to get involved with real estate that speaks to you, whether it's providing, you know, clean, affordable housing for folks that can't own their own property, whether it's getting involved in agriculture and seeing why, you know, the calorie crunch is coming and how we can benefit from that, whether it's figuring out how I can do something with real estate that feeds my passion, you start there and you start to get your mind around these concepts. And the great news is there's no hurry. 20 years from now, it will be 20 years from now, whether you do anything or not. So you don't want to just wait, but you don't have to jump in tomorrow. We meet people that, you know, they find our podcast and they're like, man, I've never invested in real estate. Now I want to go completely all in. Well, mm-hmm. we would say, hold on a minute. Let's do a little research. Let's do a little study. Let's figure it out and then take meaningful steps, right? You can get to, from where you are now to where you want to be. If you'll just devote some time to learning about real estate, getting around people that are doing it. We love to get around people that are doing real estate because it expands our mind. You know, as you've been on the summit, there's so many people that come from all over the world who do drastically different things. It all falls under the banner of real estate, but it's different. So you have to figure out what's going to appeal to you and what's kind of the logical next step.
Yeah, and I want to talk about this timing bit a little bit because, putting on both the summit at sea and the conference that happened on land the 2 days prior in the future of money and wealth, a really wide, diverse set of opinions. And so, Russ, question to you. When I came away from that, you know, that fantastic panel of people you've put together and all the faculty and talking with, honestly, you know, most of the people in the audience, you could put them on stage and be, you know, flip the whole thing around. It would have been great. So tons of experience in the room. And really, I came away with a sense that a lot of people have a sense that things might be a little bit expensive. I know you just said, Robert, that a lot of asymmetry in the real estate market. Certainly, we can see maybe some properties in some areas might be overpriced, all of that. But Russ, for you, I really came away with this idea that a lot of people shared my concern, maybe the concern that my tribe of people listening to this share, that that this is a really difficult time to figure out what to do with your money to be safe, given what the Federal Reserve and the other central banks have done, what Wall Street's done, all of that. So when you talk about that sense of timing, where do you see us in this particular story, and how would you counsel somebody to begin approaching this space of real estate? Is it time to just be learning, or is it time to be learning and investing, or does that answer to that really matter on, is it too vague to answer?
No, it's not too vague to answer at all, and it's a great question, and it's, you know, it's kind of one of my pet peeves is that because people think in terms of asset classes, they think in terms of commodities. And I don't mean like commodities like oil and metals and, you know, pork bellies and things like that. But I mean this notion that something in an investment world is universal. It's always the same. And real estate is not that way, as Robert said at the top. Mm-hmm. So you can always find a good deal. Now, that's even true in the stock market. And you can say, oh, the stock market's overvalued, but there's always going to be companies that aren't. If you're really good and you know how to find value, you have a chance. But the problem with the stock market, in my opinion, is most people do not know how to really underwrite a company. They're not Warren Buffett. They can't look at a company's financials and really understand if this company is fairly valued or not. So you have to be very sophisticated to buy stocks as a value investor in a hot market, a lot less so with real estate. So the idea is that you can go into a neighborhood, and even in the very same neighborhood, you can find two houses that look exactly the same, but because they have a different ownership structure, because they're in different condition, maybe one is facing one side of the street or in one school district and a different school district, they're very different properties, and you can negotiate the deal. You don't get really to negotiate the deal when you go to buy stock or almost anything else. And so again, because of the nature of real estate, you can always find a good deal. Do you have to work harder in a hot market? Absolutely. The advantage of right now is that interest rates are still fairly low, even though they're rising. And so if the interest rates are going to continue to rise, then the quicker you lock in that debt we talked about earlier, actually the better off you are. The other thing to be people are afraid of is the asset value. Well, there's no margin calls with real estate. If I go buy today a property worth $100,000 and I put $20,000 down and then it goes down to $50,000, nobody's going to call the loan even though I have an $80,000 loan. As long as the rents come in and I can make that payment, if you go back historically and look at the asset values of real estate, even in the financial crisis, they fell maybe 40-50% at the worst, in the worst markets at the worst time of the crisis, but the rents didn't fall that far. And so real estate and controlling real estate over the long term is about cash flow. And so if you fix the cost of your debt, if you have conservative cash flows and rents, then even if that property were to drop, there's no margin call. And think about it, even if the price never came back, what do you think the odds of that are? Right? But if it never came back, the price dropped from 100,000 down to 50 and never, ever came back, how much of your money do you have in it? 20. And then the tenants are going to pay off the other 30. And at the end of that rainbow, you're going to have a house that's paid for. And no matter what the pricing structure is like in the world, a home that's paid for is a home that's paid for is valuable. In other words, it doesn't matter if it's worth $1 million or whether it's worth $20, a home that's paid for provides utility to human beings. We go back to what I said at the top of the show, you have an exchange of value. Provide housing to someone, and they will give you typically 25-30% of their income to live in your home. And so that's worth something. Doesn't matter what you denominate it in. And so this is why inflation and deflation really don't move a real estate investment. You benefit from inflation, you're hedged against deflation.
Well, gentlemen, I'd really like to turn now both to the Summit at Sea itself that Adam and I attended this past year, as well as the onshore production, The Future of Money and Wealth, that we attended, which met just fantastic people there. Some of the people who've been following me for years managed to find me there, and I got to meet a bunch of amazing people. And I had, from the total experience, I had three obvious standouts, which really were great for me. One, at the Summit at Sea was this brilliant presentation by Simon Black, just really caught me, made me think in new ways, just as one standout. There were many. Second was being exposed to the idea of a self-directed 401k, which I'm going to be breaking down and allowing other people who follow me to learn more about that, because that really opened my eyes. And the third was that real estate obviously is an important asset class to be exposed to. So with that, Robert, you know, now that the dust is settled and, you put on this most extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary event with Russell, it's just an amazing experience, both for the content, but I think even more importantly for the camaraderie. As you look back on it, what really stood out for you this year?
Yeah, you know, this was our 16th year of doing our Investor Summit. It's the highest level of event we do. It brings people from all over the world. We spend a couple of days in a hotel, then we get on a cruise ship for a week and really have a chance to break bread and spend time. And, you know, it's not just what you learn from the front of the room. It's a conversations. And as you mentioned, we could have put the audience on stage, and that's what we did for a full week after the days on land. And that was really the thing, is to watch people take a new idea, kind of process it, you know, and think about it, and then at dinner, discuss it around their table. And that just really solidifies, whether you agree with the speaker or not, whether it's something you're familiar with or not, when you get around other people that are in the same boat, literally digesting the information and maybe come from a different background or a different country or a different currency, that's really the magic of it. And many of these speakers are amazing on their own, but getting them together, and when you can have a panel where these folks discuss between each other, that's really the exciting thing for us. We have always been thrilled to get this group of people together, and it just gets better and better. And when you and Adam came the first year with us 2 years ago, it was a great way to expose our audience to your message, which, of course, is not a message that a lot of people are paying attention to. And we wanted to fix that in our world. And then when you came back this year, it was, you know, now you've got friends and they recognize it, and you guys are able to, you know, bring more value. But the interaction, right, the panels between the different speakers, to me, that's the most interesting and unique thing of the summit.
Hey, Chris, I want to jump in with one thing. I've got something that I think is really relevant that you'll appreciate. And that's our young adult program. Mm-hmm. For the last couple of years now, we have created a program where we give a big discount, basically just a little bit below cost. We have a scholarship program for young adults ages 18 to 25. And Robert and I have just become convinced that it's going to be really, really important as this millennial generation matures and they vote and they have influence on the type of world we're going to live in, that they have a good economic education. And we want to show them that investing is fun. It doesn't have to be boring. I mean, you know, you were there. You know, we have a really, really good time. The conversations are intellectual, but they're also stimulating and fun. And then, of course, it's very social. You talk all the time about social capital being one of the eight forms of capital that help people prepare to go through difficult times. And that's a big part of what we're doing. Well, how important is it to get our young people involved in that? And so integrating kind of the boomer generation, which we are, with the millennial generation is a big part of what we're doing on the summit. And this last year, we had a tremendous group of young people, about 35 of them, that were all under 30 years old. And they kind of formed their own little tribe, and they're out there staying connected to each other, and they're learning and studying together. Some of them are actually investing together. So that's one thing. And then the only other thing I'd say is that for someone who's sitting out there, who maybe this is their first entree and they're beginning to consider real estate and they really want to understand it. You asked earlier about getting educated. You can learn a little bit reading books, listening to podcasts and all that kind of stuff, just like you could if you wanted to learn a foreign language. You know, you could learn by doing that. But if you really want to learn that language and get immersed in the culture, the best thing you could do is take a road trip. If you want to learn Spanish, let's say, and you could go live in Mexico for a week or two, you're going to pick it up really quick when you're immersed in the environment around a bunch of people that speak the language in the context of the culture. Well, that's what the Investor Summit at Sea is. You come into this environment and you spend 10 days with some of the smartest minds in economics and investing and all the different niches that we have. And then you're having real world conversations with real world investors processing high level stuff. No questions too stupid to ask. You get a chance to ask, but you learn not only what people think, but you learn their attitudes towards how they approach risk, how they approach investing, what they're trying to accomplish. Sometimes you don't even know what you don't know until you're in the environment. If you think about how you learn to speak your native language, you learned it not by reading a book. You learned it by being in an environment around people who actually spoke it in context. So if you want to learn real estate investing fast, best thing you could do is spend 10 days with us on the Investor Summit at Sea.
Well, absolutely. And I can speak firsthand to the extraordinary value that comes out of that, the magic of it. I don't know. Is it osmosis? Is it, you know, I just happened to get the right random sets of conversations 2 years in a row that clicked things for me. I don't quite know how to put my finger on it. And yet, you know, this isn't for everybody, obviously, because it takes a week of or 10 days of your time. And maybe it's too expensive for some folks, certainly sensitive to that. Or people think, like I did, maybe I'm not a real estate person, which was a wrong thought, which you guys corrected for me. So as I look to that, though, you've done something brand new this year, which is that you actually recorded the whole thing. I saw the cameras. I was there. Tell us about that and what you're now going to make available for people, because I think it's just a fantastic thing you've done here.
Well, we had so many amazing people, Peter Schiff, Robert and Kim Kiyosaki, Brian London, of course, you and Adam were there, G. Edward Griffin, Simon Black, on and on and on, that we said, you know, this year, for the first time, we're going to create a standalone event, which we call the Future of Money and Wealth. And the first 2 days of the summit, that was our theme of the whole summit, but to your point, not everybody could manage the time or the expense to get on the ship for a week. So we opened it up and we had a lot more people that came to the first couple of days with the panels and the great, you know, presentations like Simon's that you mentioned. And that thing, we recorded the whole thing and we're happy to say that it's finally ready to go. And Russ is going to tell you all about it.
Yeah, it's 20 presentations and panels, and we cover, you know, all of the basic topics. We talk about what is money. We talk about what's going on with the dollar. Dr. Doug Duncan from Fannie Mae talked about where he thinks the economy's at and when he thinks the next recession is coming. You mentioned Simon Black's presentation, which just was an absolute mind blower, and it just goes on and on and on. So anyway, it's 20 videos, presentations, panels. We have it on an online platform, so you can watch it anywhere, anytime. You just log in and watch it. And I think, you know, Chris, when we get done with this, maybe what we can do is just give your listeners the opportunity. We'll send them an email and just give them a list how they can find the Real Estate Guys podcast, how they can find out more about the Investor Summit at Sea, other resources that we have, and of course, how they could get their hands on the Future of Money and Wealth video series.
Well, fantastic. Well, let's do that, because I definitely think some people are going to be very interested in that, of course, and they should be. That was fantastic information, and I'm really glad you've made it available. I know what a big piece of work that is to first just capture the video, second to, you know, clip through it and figure out how to present it, and then to edit it so that, you know, the audio and the slides sort of merge and all of that. So I'm sure you guys have done just an absolute bang up job with that, of course. So let's talk about how people can do that and follow both of you more closely and, you know, explore the idea of maybe coming on Summit at Sea next year and get their hands on a copy of the 2018 experience we're just talking about.
Yeah, we'll make it real easy. All they need to do is send an email to peakprosperity@realestateguysradio.com. peakprosperity@realestateguysradio.com. We'll send you an email with links to resources and everything you want to know about us, and then you can just take it from there.
And then, since you have folks, Chris, in your audience that are maybe just going down this road of exploring real estate, we talked about kind of the four ways that we look at how you get involved. But the one that people have a hard time figuring out is this personal investment philosophy. So we have an audio workshop that spends about 30 minutes going over what personal investment philosophy is. It's got a one-page PDF that you kind of go along with. And we'll make that available at no cost to your listeners as well, so they can kind of figure out who they are as potential real estate investors.
Well, fantastic. And would they just send an email at the same email we just heard to get access to that?
Yep, we'll have all that in there. Just send an email to peakprosperity@realestateguysradio.com. You know, we love to have the synergy between you guys and us, and this is a great way for both of our organizations to be right there top of mind. peakprosperity@realestateguysradio.com.
All right, well, if that isn't the crossover event of the blog century, it's just great meeting you guys, and I think our tribes do have a lot in common because we care about, we're curious, you know, my people and your people, we're all curious, we like to learn, we always know that we don't know everything, and we keep open minds, and it's just been fantastic meeting you, and more, just as importantly, the extraordinary people that you've managed to assemble around you because of the great work that you do, and your willingness and passion for helping people, it just comes through, and it's just absolutely been my pleasure to meet both of you guys in person and to get to know you better over time.
Well, thank you, sir. And we absolutely appreciate the contribution that you and Adam have made to our events. And it's been great getting to know you guys. And your message is so critical and so important that for us to be able to bring that to our audience has been amazing as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's fun being part of a tribe of people that can see that even though we have an economy that seems like it's hitting on at least 7 or 8 cylinders, the underlying financial system still has some foundational cracks. And, now, if you're looking at the speedometer about how fast you're going down the road, that's interesting. But if you're not checking your oil gauge and your temperature light, you might have an engine blow up on you when you think everything's going along fine. It happened in 2007. Everything looked good right up until it wasn't. And I think there's reasons to believe that we might have a breakdown here in the near future at some point. And better to be prepared and not have a crisis than to have a crisis and not be prepared. And that's what we're all about. It's fun working with you and Adam. Chris, you guys do a great job, and we really appreciate you giving us a chance to get to know your audience a little bit.
Well, thank you for that, Russ and Robert. And Russ, I couldn't have said any of that better myself. And I just want to thank you both for this very wonderful podcast. And for everybody listening, we've been talking with Robert Helms and Russell Gray, the Real Estate Radio Guys. Check them out in their podcast, the Real Estate Radio Guys. You find it no problem. And with that, I hope that anybody listening to this, please take this away. Real estate is a fantastic area to learn about. It's a wonderful investment opportunity. You have to educate yourself, and you have to start with, as Robert told us, you start with knowing yourself as an investor, you assemble your team, then you find the deals. And if you do it in that order, you will be successful, or at least be putting the odds more heavily in your favor. So with that, Robert and Russ, thank you both so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.